Uncommon is a production by Neural, a full-service digital agency. If you want to grow with a premium agency and have the ability to work with Jordan directly, then learn more at neural.com/media and request a callback. That's neurale.com/media.
My name's Jordan Michaelides and I'm the host of Uncommon, a show that asks the why on business, media, current affairs and sport. Uncommon Corona Edition sees us catching up with prior guests to document how they're adapting during this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. If you like the episode, do leave a written review on your podcast app as it does help us continue what we're doing. Don't forget that there's plenty of past episodes to keep you entertained at home. Show notes are below. You can also find all previous guests at neurale.com/uncommon. That's neurale.com/uncommon. For the full video, just search Uncommon Show on YouTube. And for social, to keep up to date with behind the scenes, search at uncommon_show. With that being said, let's get into the episode. My guest this week is Gemma Watts, friend of the show, founder of Glow Journal and skincare extraordinaire. Gemma, I can guarantee that we are recording, so this isn't going to be a waste of an hour, which is good.
Oh, wouldn't have been anyway. Any excuse for a chat.
I was trying to come up with, little openers, but I've got to ask you about The Great and if you're actually going to ever watch the TV show.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't been watching that much TV. It's okay. Stan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Stan. It's probably the only reason we got Stan.
I can't remember
who recommended it to us, but if you like Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning, if you like a bit of history, if you like drama, a bit of dry comedy.
Dry comedy, sure.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen the Fannings in anything since like Uptown Girl.
Since they were kids.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's very good. It's a very good show.
Okay. I have a very long to watch list. Every time someone tells me to watch something, I say, yeah, that sounds good. And then I just don't do it.
Do you have a jar yet? Or a list?
Do I have a jar?
Yeah. That's like classic girlfriend mode. Someone said this to me the other day. Lauren made a jar of movies that you put your hand in and you pick a movie or a TV show that people will start watching.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a thing.
I mean, if Lauren's doing it, then I'm absolutely going to copy her. Now I live my life now.
Do you know what's funny? Is like when she made it, I said to her, okay, this is really good. I'll happily watch these with you. But where are they? Like, where do you watch them on?
Yeah.
You know, like that's like a convoluted mess. So back in the day, you'd probably just torrent it or pay for it.
Yeah.
Now you've got all these platforms and it's just easy to find it. So I said to her, like, mark them all. And most of them were on platforms that were crazy expensive or you had to pay like $20 to rent it.
Oh.
So in the end, she threw it all out.
Yeah. So the jar's gone. The jar has been tipped out, emptied. It is now a cookie jar.
Yeah. The jar has now been cleaned and currently holds some excess simple syrup for the bar.
Oh, that's essential. I think you've done the right thing.
It's funny, but do you have like a go-to movie that you recommend to people?
I mean, my tastes are so warped. Like my favorite films are all, my Hitchcock classics, which is a bit, I feel like, watching a horror film, I think, is best done alone. That's not something that I do with Chris, firstly, because he's a scaredy cat, but secondly, I think it takes the fun out of it if you have, a security blanket there in the form of a human. Mm. But Psycho is my go-to. What that says about me, I do not know.
So horror is your genre?
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, sometimes I think the older the better.
Okay, why is that?
Yeah. No, I think because it's hard to say. I think the way that horror has evolved has certainly come down to, obviously special effects and CGI, but gore doesn't get me. And that's where they've been able to evolve. But then I think it's just about storytelling.
Uh-huh. It's a suspense.
Yeah. Rear Window is essentially a film about, I mean, nothing. It's just about watching out of the window. I won't give anything away, but you are so locked in for that entire film.
Have you seen Hereditary or Midsommar?
I have seen both.
Okay, what do you think?
I watched Midsommar quite recently because how do you pronounce her surname? Pew?
I don't actually know.
I want to say it's Florence Pugh, but I could be wrong.
She's an English actress.
She's amazing. I still haven't seen Little Women, but I watched all of the interviews that she did around it, and she was talking about Midsommar a lot, and I thought, that's very interesting. Her interview with, the Awards Chatter podcast, the Hollywood Reporter one, and she was talking a lot about Midsommar, and listening to that, I was like, I have to watch this.
Do you have because I love that type, that genre of horror. Like I would call it sort of, it's like where they sort of delve into cults.
Yeah. Anything with a cult, I'm there. Yeah. I'm locked
because
in.
Because it's real. To me, the stuff that is, I remember when I was a kid, I used to really get into anything that involved like religion. Like the Exorcist and stuff like that, really, like, even though I knew it wasn't real, I had no belief in God at all.
Yeah.
The simple fact that it was to do with like humans and these weird belief systems fascinated me. And then this genre of like sort of occult came out.
Yeah.
And Hereditary was the one, I think, that really sort of...
Yeah. There's another one. Both incredible films.
There's another one called Mother that Lauren and I were going to watch the other day with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but is it Mother with an exclamation mark at the end? Yeah, it's on the list. Yeah, it's in the jar.
It's basically where you're not quite sure until the end. Actually, this is an interesting thought because most of the films that I really like are when someone, you believe in the movie that person is completely rational until you get to like the end of the movie and you start to realize like, oh, they've got something wrong. They're schizophrenic, or like Shutter Island is a brilliant film.
Inception is a brilliant film. What I was about to say. Shutter Island, the idea of an unreliable narrator is so fascinating to me.
And just like I couldn't believe it when I started to realize that this guy was nuts.
Sixth Sense, same thing.
Yeah, Sixth Sense. Oh, man, that's a film. I wonder if it's like... Yeah, there's some sort of storyline in there. Because I just read, like, have you ever read or heard of Joseph Campbell?
No.
Okay, this is like...
I mean, I should have. It sounds like a very common name.
If you're into sci-fi, everyone talks about it. But so this book...
No, I'm so not into sci-fi, but talk me through it.
Joseph Campbell. So this is the book that Chris Lucas? Who's the guy who made Star Wars?
I've never seen. That's a lie. I watched one Star Wars film. It was a gift to Chris, but it was sort of torture because it
George
was,
Lucas. Sorry,
I said, my gift to you. I think it was Valentine's Day. Is that I will watch one Star Wars film. This was only maybe a year ago.
Which one?
The first one that they made, so not the first one chronologically. Is that how? My understanding of Star Wars, I watched it fine. Mark Hamill was on the Muppet Show once.
Yeah.
Back in the day, and I really enjoyed that, and that was enough for me. Miss Piggy was dressed up as Princess Leia.
I remember that clip. That's so funny.
That's all I need. I watched one film and I went, no.
It is very confusing if you're coming from a perspective of someone who's never seen it before.
It's not even confusing. It's just not for me, and no disrespect to anyone who loves it, which I'm sure is a lot of people, but like I've never seen Lord of the Rings. I have absolutely no wish to.
Yeah, I think Lauren's the same. I tried to get her to look at it, and I think we'll do it like maybe in a rainy weekend or something like that, because you need like 9 hours to do that shit.
But I also think like... I can't suspend disbelief for that long. Like, it's obviously not real. I need a film. Obviously, Midsommar's not real, but I don't know.
There's more reality to it.
Yeah, it's like grounded in something.
So,
whereas Star Wars is just, you know, a rubbish bin sort of wheeling around.
Some would argue, who like Star Wars, that it's maybe a glimpse into the future. But anyway, we can talk about this for the entire fucking episode. The Hero with a Thousand Faces is like the book that it became the trend book in the last 10 years in marketing land. Because everyone's like, oh, I need to get better at telling stories. And this is the book that George Lucas spoke about that he read. And Joseph Campbell is the guy that basically analyzed and documented. I can't actually remember when this was published. I think it was, 1949. So it's a pretty old book for the last century, but it covers like different themes of stories. So you've got things like, the adventure of the hero is like a segment of story. So a hero based journey where it's focused on the individual. And then you've got cosmology, I guess you could call it. So you've got different levels of that. And then you've got other things like myth and society, which is things like myth, cult, meditation, shapeshifters, stuff like that. And it's really interesting because he basically documents like all the different stages of the story that you need to cover. And so there's a belief that George Lucas's Star Wars, although basic, if you think about it, the reason why it was successful is because he got all the different segments of the hero's journey correct.
I mean, this would be awesome if I liked Star Wars or, you know.
Well, to be honest, it helped me understand like why I was fascinated by mythology as a kid, because my grandpa used to grab like a big thick Greek mythology book and start to read stories.
Okay.
But coming back to Midsommar, if you read that section on myth, I think that's what they do really, really well in that movie.
Book cover to cover, or can I just
yes you do. Yes, to enjoy Midsommar you have to read that. That's like peak what's that? That movie, A Midnight in Paris.
And yes.
And he starts calling the art snob something.
This is going to annoy me now.
Yeah. Fuck. I used to use it all the time as like a dig at someone who's being too high society. Than they have to be. Anyway, I'll come up with a letter.
Another great film, High Society.
Yeah, great film. And Midnight in Paris is a good film.
It is. I haven't watched that in ages. Anyway.
So, Corona.
Yeah.
Don't you love chatting about this?
Oh, my God. It's just, it still feels like, when it all kicked in, I feel like I kept using the word surreal, which is such a wank, but it's the only, like, that's still how I feel. Yeah. It's a wank, but it's accurate.
Surreal, unprecedented.
Oh, unprecedented. We've all had to pivot.
Never before.
What are some of the other ones?
Isolate.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So tell me, because I remember doing an episode with Tommy and Josh.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, because I spoke to my mate, whose dad, so he's originally from Zimbabwe and his dad never moved over here to Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
He moved to Johannesburg. He's like an epidemiologist. And so I remember when I met him at the wedding, we spoke for hours about like epidemiology, just because I just was fascinated by it.
Sure. And a couple of wines, epidemiology. Yeah.
Fucking butter bean,
makes
butter
sense.
Anyway, so he explained to me like all the things that happen for something to really kick off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would give this friend of mine tender updates during Ebola. And then the same thing during COVID. And basically we all just assumed that this would be nothing. But then again...
Oh, my... I remember this episode with the boys.
Yeah, and I said...
Because we were all in the same boat. We were all like, it seems like a flu.
Yeah, it seems like a bad zoological virus that they're going to get on top of. I don't think any of us estimated how bad the cover-up would be. And that's basically what his dad has said to me in hindsight, or said to us in hindsight, is that the information that was coming out was not what we expected. I remember like January, February, I started to not freak out, but I started to notice when there was a toilet paper run in Tokyo and then in Singapore. Because we've got friends in both places, and we were like, oh, okay, this is like very serious if people are starting to hoard toilet paper already in those places. So when did you notice? When did you take it seriously?
You know what? I know exactly the week.
Was it that Friday?
Yeah. It just showed, actually, no, it was 3 days after. Okay, so that week, this again, I come on here and I just sound like the biggest wanker, and that's probably a good reason for that. But that week was GP, Fashion Week, and then I think Food and Wine Festival was going to start maybe the following week, and then Comedy Festival maybe a fortnight after that. So my week was meant to be, I was just doing one show of Fashion Week, and that was a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I remember going, and we were all kind of joking, like, oh, are we allowed to kiss on the cheek? Are we allowed to cuddle? And we're all still doing it because we were just like, it's not a thing. That night was the Grand Prix launch party, the Glamour on the Grid.
That's right.
Thing.
I remember.
Then the next day was meant to be the GP ladies lunch, and I ended up not going because I had too much work to do, which, I mean, it looks like I'm just fluffing around all of the time, but I actually had work to do. So I was like, no, I'll give it a miss. And I had that weekend I was going to Yarrawonga with some friends, and then on the Monday I was flying out to Sydney and I was emceeing. It was like, there was a lot there was a lot happening in a short amount of time. So I was like, no, I'm just going to get on top of my work. And that was the last event that happened, because the Friday morning they announced Fashion Week, they were cancelling the last 3 days of shows. GP was cancelled that Friday morning. That afternoon they announced Comedy Festival was being cancelled and Food and Wine Festival was being cancelled. I think Flower and Garden Show. March is a lot Melbourne. So all of that happened. And I mean, these are probably unnecessary details, but I feel like I have to go through them to make sense of it all. I went to Yarrawonga that weekend, and being quite a small town, everyone was pretty relaxed. People had started hoarding toilet paper in Melbourne, but they hadn't in Yarrawonga yet. So we were like, this is dreamy. Got back to Melbourne the Sunday night, and it was like in one of those zombie or post-apocalyptic films where there's like the family and then they'll come back to town, or they've been seeing a movie and then they come outside and everything's gone. And got back to Melbourne and I'm like, what happened in the 2 days that I was away? And I still wasn't, wrongfully so, I still wasn't super stressed. The Monday I was emceeing a lunch event. And
in the park?
Yeah, the Botanic Gardens. Yeah. And it was a sit-down lunch, and we just had some hand sanitizer on the table, and we're all using our hand sanitizer, and we're like, this is fine. I then got on a plane and flew to Sydney that afternoon because I was meant to be emceeing an event on the Tuesday morning. The client had called on the Friday and said, we've cancelled the event. However, if you still feel comfortable flying, we would love for you to still come up and we will record what would have been the Q&A portion of the event anyway. So then we can distribute it to media and send it out to our PR contacts. I said, yeah, I'm absolutely fine to fly. I'm healthy. I haven't got a temperature, so I'm definitely A-okay. Got to the airport, bumped into Sarah Davidson, who...
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we hugged. Like, we hugged on the Monday night at the airport, And we were laughing and like, oh, we've both got so much sanitizer on. We smell like a bloody brewery. And we were so flippant about the whole thing. Got on the plane. Plane wasn't packed, but there was, you know, enough people on there for me to be like, this is normal. It's a Monday evening flight. Did the filming on the Tuesday, then went to the home of the founder of Lano Lips. Because okay. I was interviewing her for my podcast, and she, everyone from Lano Lips had just started working from home on that day. But it was still like we had a wine. I was just sitting in her house. We hugged. Then I got on the plane home, and I reckon there were six people on the whole plane from Sydney to Melbourne. And that's when I was like, oh, you silly bitch. This is a real thing. And people, and I think at the same time, people had started DMing me being like, hey, I know you're going to a lot of events and you're still working, but, you know, stop. Please stop it. I still went to the gym that Thursday, but I was like, this is fine because it was just me and my trainer in the gym. There's literally no one else there. Copped it on Instagram for that. And then I'm like, but the gym's still open. And then the next day they announced they were closing the gyms.
You know what's interesting is like how proportionate the response is to what is happening at the time.
Yeah.
Like how do people, what I couldn't understand is it was that, I do remember that Friday, and I think it kicked off in Australia and New Zealand, all these lockdowns started happening. Like you said, all the events got cancelled. That was Friday the 13th, by the way, of March.
Was it?
Yeah. So
there you go.
You'll be intrigued by that. That's the Saturday, because obviously still being involved in financial markets and having a lot of clients in that area is when the shit really hit the fan in America and people freaked out. I remember though a week before that, like the NBA got cancelled, and I remember thinking like, fuck.
It was when that's they shut weird. Down Broadway for me that I was like, but Broadway, how, what are the people going to do with their time?
The interesting thing in hindsight is that everything seems like an overreaction in hindsight when you do well. I remember hearing, I listened to a speech by the Prime Minister at the press club probably, might have been 2 or 3 weeks ago, when they started articulating policy for the next, like what's going to be happening. And they started talking about, they started talking about, what do they call it? Job maker, but it's not a program per se. It's about policy. And so, you know, he was saying that it's really interesting how the mood is now that people have all of a sudden gone, oh, why did we do all these things? And, you know, open the country right back up. And he's saying like, well, the fact that we feel that way is a good thing, and not like they do in America where basically it's an absolute shit show.
And that is putting it very politely.
Yeah. Like 110,000 dead. God knows how many are miscounted. Brazil will probably overtake them in the next, in the next few weeks, which is very sad.
It's sad.
Very, very sad. I mean, I remember their president, Bolsonaro, was he was at like some event, not even like 3 weeks ago, saying that the response is overzealous, and like both his health minister and the chief medical officer in Brazil like resigned.
Jesus.
And now they're like at they're at 38,000 deaths and 31,000 new cases a day.
Christ.
Crazy. So yeah, in hindsight, like, it's interesting to reminisce and think about it.
Reminiscing has just made me, like, how wrapped up am I in my own shit? Like, the fact that my take on, you know, when I started taking things seriously was when I started copying it in my Instagram DMs.
Yeah. But I would also argue that response is a bit overzealous.
Yeah.
Because there are people that are doing, like, I don't know, people when they're on social media in particular relate things to them and their own lives. Like those people flying, there could, you could argue that there's a lot of people still moving around the country because they are considered essential services and they're going to spread the disease.
Yeah.
No matter what.
I think what I was pleased, like I was pretty, once I realized how bad it was, I was pretty quick to be like, okay, yeah, we're just remote recording from now. I'm not, events are done. I'm strictly working from home. And I was like, it wasn't a huge shift for me because I was already working from home, but I became quite strict about it very quickly. So I think as soon as I got home from the gym that Thursday morning, I was like, yeah, you've got to work from home now.
Yeah, it might have just been that that's what you needed. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
I it's interesting, like, looking at the business now in hindsight as well. Like, I think for us, we went from doing 100%, not 100%, but like 80, 70% video and podcast work.
Yeah.
Now it is like 10 or 20% of that, and we were able to pivot and set it. Like, we're already doing this type of work. Pivot.
There it is.
We're already doing website, paid media, all the full service digital agency stuff. It's just that we'd never had it listed on the website, and we started actively going after clients like that. Mm. And so now, like, the bulk of what we're doing is that, which is great. So we've been able to do quite well. That being said, February was a horror. February, March was a horror month, I think.
Really?
Because we measure not based on sales, because we've got like a lot of fixed costs. We measure it based on net profit, and I'm pretty sure our net profit went to like negative 40% for a period of the month.
Not ideal.
No, not ideal at all.
But so, I do think in the grand scheme of things, you guys and myself are fortunate in that, I mean, it sounds like I'm, you know, pumping up our tires, but we're fortunate business-wise that we do a few different things. Like if my income was just emceeing, I would be rooted, which I think is the technical term from a financial standpoint, rooted. But it was just a little bit of what I was doing.
And there are people that we've interviewed like that, like Shura Taft. His entire, everything is gone.
Yeah.
He actually had to consider genuinely what he was doing career-wise. And he's lucky now that some events have started coming back.
Yeah, thank God.
So I 100% agree. And I also spoke to Dan Monheit, who's sort of, he's probably a decade older than us. He runs an agency like myself, but he was in a position where, you know, a recession happened, he came out of uni, he couldn't find a job, and he started his business. And so it actually put him in a very, as he told me, and as I sort of looked at it, he was in a very advantageous position because he didn't really have any obligations. Like, at our age now, even with Lauren and I, what obligations do we have? The obligation to each other, and that's it. The rent could move out anytime, no debt, no kids. No pets.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a really advantageous time. Whereas if you look at someone like my dad's business has just been obliterated. I think like their sales were down like 50%. So he's in print media. I don't think it'll ever recover, to be honest.
No, God, just media in general in Australia. I feel like you would get those telem media alerts.
Yeah.
But yeah, every day it's like closure at such and such or staff changes happening at Thingo. And then you read it and it's like this paper is absorbing 15 other local newspapers.
Yeah, Mumbrella's really good for that.
Yeah.
It's actually funny. I spoke to Dan Monheit last night because we're looking to hire like some positions that we've never hired for before. And he was like, man, this is the best time to be hiring people. Like literally the best time that he's ever been in the market to be hiring people because, yeah, a lot of redundancies, a lot of hiring freezes, a lot of pay freezes. So it's, yeah, I don't know what the recovery will be like, but I guess I'm interested for you with Glow Journal, the creative side of the agency. I know you told me off air that basically this is the year you're going to move into an office, get staff, but now you've got all this time.
Well, it was never like a must do for this year because this is the year of home ownership and we are which is, I don't want to jinx it, but we're, so I was like, that's the priority. But just my workload is a bit crazy at the moment. So I thought, okay, perhaps I do start, because at the moment I outsource things for glowjournal.com, like for obviously our shoots. I'm not going to take the photos, do all the makeup, do all of that. I just creative direct and stand back and let the professionals do it. But I thought, okay, maybe I do start outsourcing a bit of copywriting. And then when this all kicked in, I don't know, there was something holding me back in the first place. And then when this all kicked in, I think that I would want to be sitting with someone and teaching them the way that I write and the way that I do things. So now I'm sort of back to where I was when the last time that I was on the show. I don't think I need to hire staff at the moment. I'm working so much, and that's all spread across the website. God, it looked so opportunistic because we already had a relaunch scheduled for the, I think, the last week of March. That was already in the calendar. And then this all happened and everyone's like, wow, perfect timing to relaunch, Jen, because everyone's looking at their computers. I'm like, I know.
So, very good timing. That was the note I had here. Glow Journal 2.0 launch.
Yeah. Couldn't have been better.
Everything from butt masks to Kate Mogg.
Yeah. So, she's a hottie. Yeah. But that was like, I had been gearing up to that relaunch for a little while, but what would maybe take some people 6 months doesn't take me as long, because as soon as I have the idea, I'm like, I will not sleep until I have a full game plan in place. So we did a full day shoot and got about, I reckon we can call it 4 months worth of content out of that one day. We just got all of the girls in different looks, and I had a list of like, I just wanted sort of generic shots that I could tee up for whatever content that I felt that I needed to write at the time. I coded the website all myself because
What did you use? Did you use a CMS?
It was, so I basically just used every possible option of coding. I had a template in place and then I would just jump in and, you know, move things around as you do. It's like, it's the cheats way of doing it, but,
what's it built on? Is it WordPress?
It's WordPress, yeah. So it was the same. All of the content and everything is still there from the old site. I didn't have to, you know, migrate anything. But having like a basic understanding of how to tweak something that's already in place was really good. And it meant that I just can't do the back and forth. I can't do it anymore. It's too frustrating. I have such a clear idea of what I want from every element of my business, and particularly because I'm a very visual person. My graphic designer did my logo and my branding years ago when I first started. She did the JenKWatts.com 3.5 years ago, which was just like killer. And then when we branded it to Glow Journal, she did all of that as well, but the branding was still really cohesive. And I've kept that style kit basically the same, and then every new piece of collateral I've just built it myself. I think once you have those skills, it makes it a bit easier, because I'm happy to sit up at my computer in the middle of the night and get that done, because then I know, okay, I can push this out at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Whereas if you are outsourcing all of that, you do have to wait. You can't control other people's schedules. So doing all of that myself was really time consuming, but so worth it, because it did mean that I could launch at the end of March, and the website traffic has been unbelievable, and the volume of sponsored editorials we're doing now is so far beyond what we were doing previously, and that was my goal. You spend all this money on a shoot, and it was a lot of money, but so worth it, because clients then look at this primo quality website and say, okay, we want to be on that.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you do things like that at the time, it seems like a considerable investment, but it almost always pays for itself.
Well, my accountant was like, Gemma, you have no outgoings.
What, a salary? That's it?
Yeah, he's like, I wouldn't worry. You can spend this money, and I think you're spot on. Clients are going to, you know, and I made it back pretty much immediately. So that was great.
Have you had any time to get, not so much existential, but think about what the next few years looks like and whether this period can set you up for that?
Less that. For me, I mean, you know how I work. It's less about setting a, you know, kind of this concrete goal. And for me, it's more about like every decision. It's such a hard thing for me to explain because I feel like I would describe myself as a forward thinker in that every decision that I'm making, I'm just very intuitive. When I make a decision, I'm like, is there longevity in this? I'm playing the long game. But at the same time, I do believe that if you're doing good work in the moment, that is setting yourself up, which it's definitely not the right strategy for everyone, but it has worked for me. And when I look at all of the opportunities that I have been afforded over the last 3.5 to 4 years, a lot of those opportunities didn't exist even 12 months ago. So if I just know the way that I work, and if I put the blinders on and just have this one goal ahead of me, I could potentially close myself off to opportunities that might arise.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the way that I do it is I look at, I define a type of, I don't know how to explain it, like a type of being.
Yeah.
Like a, Thorin's actually making this graphic for me at the moment, which helps me visualize it. But basically I look at it as like systems versus goals. So being targeted towards a type of way of life, and there are goals that you have, little goals that you check off along the way. So I don't get sick of, like, when I get to that goal, I go, oh, what's next? I have in my mind that, okay, this is aligned with me being this type of person for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's sort of the way I look at it.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I have a very clear vision of what I want from my life, and that's not necessarily my life looking a certain way. It's just, you know, I love the freedom that I have now, and I feel, touch wood, comfortable financially. And I think the last 3 months have been less about setting myself up and more about looking at what it is that I'm doing now and saying, yes, this is right and this is sustainable. Because certainly the copywriting business, I've said forever, I'm sure I said it the last time on the show that I was on the show, I'm super aware that I will not be able to make the money that I'm making from Instagram forever. It's going to dry up. It's just one of those things that is, I believe, is inevitable. But people are always going to need someone to craft copy for them. So Instagram hasn't slowed for me at all over the last few months, but so that's been great. But my copywriting work has gone absolutely through the roof, so that's been really nice, and it's kind of reaffirmed that everything I thought that I was doing right, I have done right. I really feel like I've set myself up in a way that is sustainable.
When's your birthday?
28th of November, Sagittarius with a Capricorn moon. Huge bitch. huge bitch.
If any of your friends are watching, and if we get to that point in 28th. This book, who's it actually published by?
Tasha. It's a book. Good cover.
The copy book. It's like the original book on copywriting. It's
got
every single, like all your classic ads, like your original Chivas Regal ads.
Of course, that's what you've opened it up to. I'll probably buy that for myself. I'm the hardest person to buy for, because if I decide that I want something, I'm like, yeah, okay, here's my money.
You need to get it. Yeah, it's a very interesting book. It's really, really good. It changed my perspective on copywriting.
Okay, good. I'm going to read that. Done.
Okay, so things for you are, in a sense, good, at least.
Yeah, touch wood.
To reaffirm things.
It's a funny time. Fashion is... I'm not working in fashion anymore, but it's a weird time for fashion because just the way that the supply chain sort of works. So fashion was really delayed. They knew how serious things were at the beginning of the year, because even items that are designed and even made in Australia, a lot of the fabric is sourced from Asia and specifically China. So those deliveries slowed, which meant that designers were having to push back the time that they would get their samples together, the samples being the just one basically a draft piece of each thing that would be in the collection, and then you take that to your retailers and they choose, okay, I want 10 of that in a size 6. I want this. Then they put in the order. Then you send off that order. It's just the way of doing things to make sure you don't have a crazy amount of excess. So all of that was delayed. Samples were delayed, which meant models were then out of work. Shoots that they thought they would be doing for the autumn winter season were pushed back into autumn winter. So a lot of things are now close to a season behind. So the fashion community was super aware of what was going on pretty early on. Beauty hasn't been hit too hard, touch wood, but it does sort of operate in a similar way to fashion, particularly as far as shoots go. And with makeup, no one's been doing any face touching the last few months. So I haven't been hit, but you just don't know. There could be a delay somewhere. And I could be hit somewhere down the track, but
yeah, I think about that now in hindsight, that what an amazing pivot, because it is like, if you just look at it from a economics perspective, like beauty is not as cyclical as fashion, nowhere near.
No, not in the slightest. And I also, again, I don't want to sound opportunistic. I'm just very grateful. But beauty traditionally booms in a recession. It goes back as far as the Great Depression. People want to feel good about themselves, but they can't go out and buy a big ticket item like a new car. And they called it the lipstick effect, because people would go out and buy a lipstick. And that's your mood booster. And that has, it's remained the case for just about every major recession, stock market crash, you name it. And I was like, okay. So that's what's happened in the past. This is me going back to March. Mm. And I thought, okay, sure, I know that this is what's happened in the past. And everyone's going, oh, you're so lucky to work in beauty. Beauty's about to boom. And I'm like, let's not talk like that. Particularly because I was thinking, when they talk about the lipstick effect, I was thinking specifically about color cosmetics, so makeup. And I'm like, people aren't going to spend all this extra money on makeup when they have nowhere to go. This is the first time we've ever seen restaurants close. Weddings aren't happening. All of this stuff is not happening. There is sort of no need for makeup anymore. So I was like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But skincare has boomed.
Yeah.
And that's what my audience comes to me for. There are so many incredible makeup artists who I think are the experts there. But skincare is sort of my language. And there's a lot of science behind it that I won't go into, but isolation has ruined everyone's skin because our stress hormones have kicked into overdrive. Even if you haven't felt particularly stressed, there is this underlying feeling of uncertainty. Mm. Stress hormones have gone, what's going on? And it shows on our skin. So it's been an interesting time for skincare, because my shtick forever has been, it's not enough to just say to people, this is a good moisturizer. You have to tell them why it's a good product. And now, across the board, people are demanding that from everyone.
Mm. Well, it's interesting you mentioned skincare, because I would 100% agree on that. I noticed that a lot of women on Instagram, with the, like, I think about downtime. People have a lot more downtime, and so maybe they're focusing on things that they've been wanting to do, whether it's cleaning out their cupboard in the things that they're using.
Mm.
And getting, not professional, but we bought an entire bar. We just used to have like some gin, vermouth, Campari, just for Negronis. Yeah. That was it. Now there's like 30 different spirits. And I'm like, well, fuck, I'm not really going to be going to a bar for the next 9 months unless I'm really invited.
Well, and now that they're open, I'm still kind of like, eh.
Yeah. You know, it's not the same, because only 20 people are allowed in the place.
Yeah.
But you are right about the lipstick effect. I've got to speak to Dan Monheit about doing his next podcast, because they do a lot of heuristics and cognitive biases. And I feel like the lipstick effect is a good one that I read about recently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good to point out, because people will go from buying their Celine handbags to buying a small lipstick. I remember Lauren had some yen left over when we were in Tokyo Airport, And we're just thinking, like, what can we spend this on? We can't really cash it back. And we're like, oh, we just walked past Chanel. And Chanel had, you know, you can buy a Chanel lipstick for $50, like a really nice lipstick. Which she never uses, by the way. She's like, oh, I've got it. It's only for special occasions.
Oh, no. Nothing is for special occasions. Yeah. Nothing is for special occasions. But that's also my philosophy surrounding beauty gift buying. That's where the Glow Journal gift guides came from, however many years ago now. In there's a wonderful UK-based beauty writer, Sally Hughes, who has a couple of books, but in one of them she talks about buying gifts. And when you work in beauty, it's kind of just expected that that is the category you'll purchase gifts for people from. But I think it's so much better. I'm going completely off topic, but I think it's so much nicer to spend, how to word this, the amount of money that you have. So let's say it's $50, buy the smallest possible thing. So that might be a Chanel lipstick, which is this beautiful, beautiful gift that, you know, in Lauren's case, she's saving for a special occasion. I'll have words with her about that. She'll start wearing it. Or, and this is the way a lot of people go, they're like, $50, okay, so I can get 6 of these cheap bath bombs. I can go to the chemist and get this huge eyeshadow palette. And they think it's more about getting like quantity over the quality. So I would agree.
That's a really good analogy because, you know, I was just realizing then. So, what was it? Like it was before this kicked off. I remember I bought Lauren, actually we're having a debate about this, with Ethan, who's been on the show, my friend Zoe. There is a real lack of good direct to consumer lingerie labels. Like as in if you're it doesn't matter the size of your bust, there is, you've either got old lady focused shops or you've got skinny, model-based brands that their sizing is like small, medium, large. Like I didn't realize Gooseberry Intimates was like small, medium, large. I was blown away. They don't even have
shops there.
It's a joke. So we were having this debate, and anyway, so the point is, if I buy every now and then, I like to buy Lauren something because I like to give gifts.
Yeah, nice.
And so I bought her a voucher to Simone Pirelli.
Yes.
But when she gets the voucher to Simone Pirelli, she takes forever to make a decision as opposed to when you get something from a beauty place. Like if I get her a treatment, or if she goes to buy something from Mecca or something like that. And I feel like sometimes in terms of value for money, things in the beauty industry have a higher value per dollar, beauty skincare that is, to fashion.
Well, I think...
Like, if you spent $500 at Celine versus $500 in the beauty space and really nice products, I feel like you would feel happier with the latter.
Potentially. I do think... I think it comes down to personal preference, but I like that you've used lingerie as an example because I think... I think part of the reason it takes so long to make a decision in that space, and I would consider perfume falling under that category as well, in that it's so personal. So with beauty, you might go into, say, a Mecca or your David Jones Beauty Floor, wherever you've chosen to shop, and you see a product and you go, oh, I have seen X, Y, and Z raving about this. I really want to try it. And it's done. Decision made. You've had your recommendations. Off you go. Whereas with lingerie, and I guess with fashion in general, but with lingerie and with perfume, it is entirely subjective because it's really for you and potentially your partner, but I think it's for you. So you're never going to really buy lingerie based on a recommendation. You might choose the brand because you know it has a good reputation or someone has said, oh, I bought the most amazing thing from here. But when you are purchasing really with no recommendation in the back of your mind, it's going to naturally take you a bit longer to make that call because you want it to be for you.
But I also feel like she's done that with... I remember once buying another recent one was maybe Gorman.
Yeah, okay.
Buying a voucher there. I don't know. I just feel like fashion is, I think it's probably the same thing. Lingerie still falls under some of the same
it's
thing.
It's personal.
But yeah, it's a very hard decision to make. Yeah, I actually had this recently with my birthday. I'm like, someone asked me, what do I want? And it's so hard because most of the time people can't get accurately what you actually want.
Yep.
I often just tell them, buy me a voucher to P. Johnson Taylor's and I'll just get something made up.
Yeah, I would rather be, shout me dinner, which potentially may not happen for the rest of the year, but I'm so, like, I've got so much stuff, which are champagne problems, but I would rather have, like, just the nice night with my girlfriends.
Mm. You mentioned before about how everyone's inside now, skincare's different, or skincare's the focus as opposed to beauty and so forth. That was one of the questions I had around beauty, and I noticed, obviously you did a lot of live events. So there was a big, particularly on Instagram, there was a big change in the types of content you're making. And I guess I was intrigued as to, what do you think will slingshot back? Do you think that a lot of brands now will see that as an easier way to test an activation, as opposed to doing an event where they've got to pay for 20 influencers to come and do all that sort of stuff?
I think where brands are seeing the value now is in, particularly with beauty specifically, is in education. So a lot of brands have still been doing launches, but they've been doing them via Zoom. So you'll have an educator from the brand, or in some cases the founder, talking you through the new products. Sometimes the brand will send you out the products so you can walk through something like a facial via Zoom with a bunch of other beauty media. Now, my issue sounds so aggressive, but the thing that I didn't love about events in the past, and still don't love if events started up tomorrow, this isn't something I would love, is just going to what feels like a party. And if they're launching a moisturizer, for example, there might be some sort of beautiful flower wall with like a glass box and a moisturizer, and then we take some pictures of it and then we drink cocktails and eat food. Wonderful evening. Do I leave knowing anything more about that product? No. And for some people, that is a great night. And of course, I'm so grateful to be invited to these beautiful events. But my passion is the science of beauty. So I want to walk away from an event having learnt something. Otherwise, it feels like sort of work masquerading as socializing. And if I'm going to socialize, I'm going to do it with my friends.
I've always thought that. Looking at these events, I remember Lauren and I debated, and then we had a mutual client that we know. I called you about it probably 2 months ago, and they're sort of in the skincare space. And we were just talking to them about the different avenues or channels that they could look at. And I've never, ever understood the event other than being a brand building exercise.
Yeah. And this is why I love being asked to MC these events, because I often have the opportunity to do a bit of consulting with the brand. Yeah. I'm like, get everyone to be seated. Don't invite a stupid number of people who don't want to be there. Invite your key players who are actually there to learn and want to know more about the product. Have a sit down, get whoever it is, it could be any MC, but have some sort of a Q&A, have some sort of interactive experience. Beauty is so much, it's a tactile thing. There needs to be an element of touch and feel in an event, I believe. And there needs to be education. We need to sit down, hear about the product, what makes this different, talk to me about the launch, so on and so forth. Those are the sorts of events where I walk away and I think, great, now when I go into a trial, home phone is ringing. What year is it? I go into these events thinking, okay, am I going to learn something today? If I walk away having learned something, then it sets me up for the subsequent product trial that's going to take place.
So it's if you think about the ROI, it is they're getting that brand building element, plus they're also making sure that, you know, like if I think about an influencer who's really engaged, like someone like a Steph Claire Smith with Bondi Sands is very involved and often talking about it off the cuff. They don't...
Yeah.
they don't do it because they're just being paid to do it. They do it because they value the product
and
and actually want to learn more about it, which then further integrates them into your actual brand.
And I think Steph is a really good example. It's very clear that it's such an authentic partnership between Bondi Sands and Steph. And we have the same spray tanner. And Janet was saying, so she did Steph's wedding tan and Janet didn't have Bondi Sands' newest salon formula in the salon. So Steph organized for the new products to be sent to Janet because Steph was like, I really want you to do my tan with these products. Nobody would have known. Steph could have just posted a photo with the salon tan and not even mention what formula it was, but she put in the work behind the scenes. This is possibly confidential information that I'm not supposed to know, but I just hearing that, I was like, okay, wow. Mm. She's gone above and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you want from that. That's where the influence relationship is more valuable than your classic educational or brand building content. It's the little things behind the scenes that you don't see.
Yeah. And it can be hard because not hard for me, but hard for, say my audience, because I'll get a lot of DMs asking for product recommendations, which I love. I love that people trust me with this. A lot of the products that I use and love are the brands that I work with. And that's why I work with them. I work with CeraVe, I work with La Roche-Posay because I love their products. So then when the opportunity to partner with them comes up and be an ambassador for these brands, I'm like, well, yeah, sure, because I already use the products. So then I have to really make sure when someone says to me, okay, what is your favorite hyaluronic acid serum? I'm like, well, CeraVe, I've got a new product. Full disclosure, I do work with the brand, but they're not paying me to send you this DM. I could recommend you anything. So I feel like I've got to put in a little extra work to convince them because they're like, yeah, but they're paying you.
What would be interesting is to see not a card, but like a rating system that you have. I'm just trying to think about it because, you know, I see you post those things.
Mm.
And because you've got to battle a lot of people who are skeptical or cynical. I'm a skeptical person. And so I understand where that person would come from, but I also know you.
Well, so, I think most people trust me at this point. Touch wood. But I
wonder what it would be like if they could see what you use for different products and what you are sponsored by and who you wish you could be sponsored or work with.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. This is why every day I'm like, when I talk about having this clear idea of what I want from my life, the brands that I get to work with on, you know, in a super collaborative way now are brands that I have used for years and that I have loved. Like the fact that I work so closely with Mecca, which is a store that I used to be, you know, up against the window, like pouring at the window like a little puppy dog. And the fact that now I work with them. And, you know, yeah, so I'm very fortunate in that pretty much anything that would be on my wish list of brands to work with, we're already there. And I think part of that is potentially due to the podcast, because my favorite thing to do, as you know, is to sit down and have a chat with people. So it's a getting to know you exercise with me and these brand founders. And when they find out, oh, you've used this product for X, Y, and Z years. Okay, well, let's talk more about this when we've, you know, finished recording.
Yeah. How has the podcast changed? I noticed that actually you encouraged me to think about, like you made a post about interviewing people that ordinarily you wouldn't be able to interview because of, you know, excess downtime or for whatever reasons.
Yeah. I
know we've committed now to sort of this new setup for anyone who's not in Melbourne at the time, which is probably going to open up a lot more doors for interviews.
Well, yeah, that's exactly the way that I've looked at it. At first, when I was still in denial, when I was still jumping on a plane willy-nilly and thinking this is fine, I remember looking at how many interviews I pre-recorded and going, yeah, this will take me through to the end of April and by May we'll be recording face-to-face again. It's going to be a beautiful thing. So many of the brand founders that I interview, though, are either in Sydney, which is, to me, feels accessible, or they are traveling internationally and they're doing a launch and I'm able to grab an hour or so with them. So even if I were to start recording face-to-face again, I don't have the opportunity to sit down with my Sydney brand founders, and none of the international brand founders are coming to Australia. So it took me a few weeks after I got over my initial, no, but we'll be able to record in person, because so much of interviewing is body language, and yeah. So much of my energy comes from being in the room and having the chat with them beforehand, like while I'm setting everything up and just breaking the ice. But it's like you can jump onto, obviously we didn't because we know each other, but you jump onto a Zoom call and it's kind of like, right, let's get into it.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I remember Lauren and I were talking about this last night, like it's so much easier to do Zoom-based interviews. You don't have to do as much preparation around the place, but there's no doubt that it's way more fun having people in.
That's what it is. It's more fun. So rather selfishly, I was like, I don't want to do these remote interviews. And then I was actually in Mission Zara when they were saying, okay, well, this could open us up to a whole range of people that we wouldn't get to speak to otherwise who are overseas, because they're in the same boat. They did all of their interviews face-to-face. And I thought, okay, well, actually, yeah, that's a really good point. Why am I so focused on talking to local talent face-to-face when this is the time that I could be laying the groundwork to speak to the people on my wish list of brand founders to talk to? So I the last few interviews that I've done and the next, I think, five that I've got coming up are all international brands. And while it is obviously so important for us to be supporting local brands at this time,
there's a certain reality.
It would be remiss of me to pass up that opportunity for me to be able to talk to these brand founders that I've admired for such a long time and may never get to meet face-to-face, you know, down to location. Why would I pass up that opportunity? I really can't think of a good enough reason.
Do you know what? I think what this period has done is it's made the audience, the excuse I used to have personally was around quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now that everyone has moved to having this as a standard, as me looking at this as the lowest rung standard is okay. And people don't really care that much.
You and I had this conversation because I was like, oh, this is so annoying. And then I think your first remote episode came up before mine. And I was like, shit, that sounds really good. And you were like, great. I don't think that it does, but sure. And I was like, no, I was just grateful to have something new to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the main thing. I think people are willing to accept that. Because I just know psychologically humans don't ever like to go backwards once they've been given room for something.
Yes.
Like if you're given work from home, this is going to be an interesting psychological test.
Oh,
everyone's been given work from home for the last 3 months, and in another 3 months, bosses are going to start saying, well, you're all back into the office now. How many employee groups are going to push back hard on that?
I think quite a number. I mean, there are some workplaces that have
obvious requirements.
Yeah. But,
like Mecca.
Yeah. But I mean, apparently Telstra might not go back until next year because being a lot of them are in the CBD. How are you going to even, I was thinking more about public transport. I'm like, there's going to be so many people in the city. There's going to be so many people on the train and it's just going to be too much too soon. And then someone was telling me the other day, in these big buildings, how can you even use the lift to get to the 35th floor if you are still maintaining social distance? It's going to take 6.5 hours to get everyone into their office. And by that time, it's bloody midnight.
Yeah. I mean, I think about 120 Collins, where I used to work, 101 Collins, where I used to visit a lot of clients at 8 to 9 a.m. in the morning. Those lifts, every corporate building actually in Melbourne is packed to the brim.
Yep.
With people just going up and up and up. So I don't know how it's going to work. And I think you're right. I think people are going to get, very picky about like the work environment that they're in. And that's why we were like, you know, you and I were chatting about fucking the cost of commercial real estate. I don't think that commercial realtors are in any sense of the word in reality right now.
It just doesn't make sense. It just does not make sense. And I think the position that I'm in is, again, oh, my job's so hard, where. But a lot of my job is trialing and taking photos of new products. So I can't be in a cubicle. I need to have access to outside because I need natural light to shoot, and I need to have room to store all of these products so that if a client calls and said, hey, has this landed on your desk yet? Have you had an opportunity to shoot this? Blah, blah, blah. I need to have it all there, which is why being at home is fine, because I've taken over the entire house. And it's also why I'm so excited for when we buy and move in to our new place. I will have, like, we'll do it up so that the storage situation is right. Again, not a bad problem to have. I need storage space for all of my products. But as far as my work goes, that's my job. That's essential. So I can't be doing that in a co-share space on a tiny desk. So I think there are people, obviously not in exactly the same situation as me, but who are looking at their home setup and going, this makes sense for me. Everything's accessible. I can get what I need quickly. I don't have to cart all this stuff to and from a tiny desk or a little cubicle. So I think people are going to look at their current situation and what they've been doing for the last 3 months and go, well, this seems fine.
Yeah, I'm 99% there with our situation. The only dilemma I have is if I interview politicians, like I've had politicians in before, and let's say if we're gunning for an interview with the leader of the opposition or the PM, and I don't know, there's just something awkward about having it in your house.
I get that. But in those, there are times when, like, I think there are spaces that you can use.
Yeah.
Thinking
about the economy, I mean, you mentioned Mecca before. It's interesting walking past the Mecca store on Little Collins at the moment. It's completely...
Have Little Collins got the things on? Because I think they've rolled out in maybe 8 stores nationally these kind of clear visors. Seats? Yeah.
Yeah. Like all the stock's gone and everything's covered.
Yeah.
And it's just chock full of mail now. They've obviously closed down the store, waiting for things to come back to normal. Actually, my cousin works at Mecca in Brighton, so I'm not sure. I'd have to ask her what things are like there. But I guess from your perspective and the way that your clients are speaking, how do you see things going over the next few months? What's your feeling? I'm not looking for a sound grab, but what's your sense at the moment?
My sense at the moment is that beauty services are going to boom over the next few months. So things like facials, eyebrows, hair. I know the hairdressers have been open, but a lot of people have been, unsure and rightly so. Nails, that sort of thing. That's what's going to boom because we haven't been able to have them for the last 3 months, whereas we have still been able to go into some stores. I haven't bloody left my house, but we've still been able to order products. So I don't think we're going to see a massive shift in people's spending habits as far as products go, but I do think where beauty consumers are going to be spending their money is on services.
Okay. Services may change. I could agree with that. Actually, I'm going to see that Dr. Lauren Connor.
Which one are you going to?
The one out where you are, it is called
Elgar Road.
Laser dermatology.
Amazing. And Dr. Yeah. Philip Beckor is the owner there.
Is he?
Yeah.
I'm seeing Dr. Sarah Brennan.
Wonderful. So, I haven't met her, but it's a great clinic.
So I can see those things certainly coming back. I know Lauren wants to go get a facial. I can't remember the last time I had a massage. That's an awkward thing at the moment because you can get those sort of bliss massage services to come to you, but it's sort of like I only want people coming here really for the podcast and friends until we know what's going on. So
yeah, I'm getting my eyebrows done tomorrow and I'm getting a facial next week. I'm not getting my nails done yet because I took my SNS off myself at the start of isolation and I still feel like my nails are really weak. I know people are just rushing back out because they want their nails to look pretty again, but I want my nails to be healthy and strong before I completely destroy them again.
That's an interesting question. Why do women's nails get weak after doing something like SNS? What is it doing to the nail?
Because when you're having the product on, your nails will feel strong and beautiful. And when you remove the product, you're actually removing the top few layers of the nail. So it's no different to if you had some sort of exfoliating treatment on the skin might feel tender and a bit more sensitive afterwards. It's basically the same thing with the nails. So you're taking off the top few layers, which are kind of a protective barrier, which is the same way that the skin works. So we've filed away a few layers of nail. So when I had to soak them for hours in 100% acetone and wrapped in foil. And for the few days that followed, every time I touched something or would accidentally knock something, it would hurt.
Yeah. I remember Lauren asking our GP and she said that it's something like that, but also women on average, or it may have been for Lauren, she was consuming less protein, and apparently protein. Like particularly
I'd have thought calcium.
No, because protein is more, the amino acids in protein are more involved in the creation of, in nails and hair, supposedly.
Right. See, there are so many things that make me a big wanker, but I've naturally got very strong and thick hair and nails. So people are like, oh, like what supplement do you use for this? And I'm like,
nothing.
None of them.
Do you have a higher protein diet, do you think?
Nah. Really? Probably not.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because my nails grow like mad.
Okay.
So anyway. okay. I want to finish off with some rapid fire questions.
I really made these slow fire last time.
Yeah, slow fire. I think most people do, to be honest. What has your morning and evening routine been like during the lockdown?
Exercise first thing in the morning. Can I extend on my quick fire question? Because there's a reason for this. I need to move my body every single morning, and I need that activity to be different every single morning, because previously my answer to what does a day look like for you, I'd be like, well, no 2 days are the same. Now every single day is the same because I'm sitting at my desk. So that little burst of activity in the morning, that is the only time of the day that I'm getting any variety. So that has been what's kept me sane.
Okay. And evening, what are you doing to decompress?
Drinking a lot more.
Okay. Drink of choice at the moment?
I've been drinking anything and everything in sight, but I've been doing a lot of cocktails because I'm all about upskilling in isolation. Yeah. So teaching myself, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
But do you ordinarily drink, like, do you have a glass of wine with dinner every night? A standard?
No, I normally have an AFD Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, sometimes Sunday also. But no, I don't normally drink with dinner, but we might have a couple of wines on a Thursday night watching like the Front Bar, which has not been on. So,
do you know, I was devastated this week. I spoke to Mick Molloy's brother.
Yeah.
What's his name? Richard Dick. His nickname's Roo, apparently.
Oh, fun.
And they told me, no, he will not be doing an interview with me.
Bugger.
Nah, he's too busy, obviously.
To
be going in a little lowly podcast like ours.
Sad.
All right. Best purchase under $200.
In isolation specifically.
Anything that you've been able to use during isolation that's given you joy?
New cocktail shaker. It's bigger because the other one I had before was quite small, and this one means I can make more than one cocktail at a time. And also I got a new yoga mat. So that's like both sides of my personality represented.
Yeah, I would say I got like a muddler.
Oh, yeah, nice.
To break up some sugar cubes and stuff like that.
Essential.
To make an old fashioned. All right, last question. Movie, doco, podcast. Maybe let's just keep it to movie or doco you've been watching during all this that you recommend to people. And don't say Tiger King.
I haven't finished it. How bad's that? Got halfway through and I was like...
Yeah, I didn't write it.
Everyone's talking about the show, like, I know what happens. I know the situation. No, not Tiger King. You know what I did? I've started rewatching The OC. And it is the train wreck that I remember. Misha Barton is not a good actress. And it's simultaneously the best and worst thing I've ever seen. And I feel like I've been doing so much reading and listening and learning that I needed something completely like mindless and vapid to just help me switch off. And man, oh man, it is doing the trick.
I watched during this, like maybe an episode or two of Gossip Girl. And I cannot believe that I thought that was like the great, like it was a good show.
I got my mum into it. She watched all six seasons.
But I look at it now in hindsight and it is such a, it's up there with The OC in terms of vapid, boring, like not much really happens.
It's the same. Oh, you know what I watched? And I'm like so many years late to the party. First season of True Detective.
Ah, I've never seen it.
It's so good. I'm like, why did nobody tell me about this? It's on, I don't know, whatever Chris has got at his house. Maybe that's Stan. Maybe he's got Stan. I think it's the Foxtel, whatever it is.
Binge.
It's so good and it's really annoying because whenever I say I want to watch a show, he's like, no, this doesn't interest me. And I'm just like, yeah, okay. But if he suggests a show and I say this doesn't interest me, he gets very sad and he was like, I really think I watched the first episode of this show. I really think you're going to like it. And I was like, oh my God, fine. I'll watch the first episode and we'll see what happens. Bloody amazing.
It sounds like Lauren and I do. Can I ask if you guys start watching a movie at say the end of the week in particular, when you've had a long week, what's your record for falling asleep on the couch?
I don't. Okay. I do not sleep during movies. Chris has fallen asleep before the opening credits have ended.
Okay, because there's always one. I've never fallen asleep and Lauren always falls asleep.
If I'm too tired to watch the movie, I will tell you I am too tired to watch this movie.
I like that. That's good. Look, Gemma, thanks for coming on. We had some tech issues at the start.
It's because you're trying to be a beauty blogger now. That's what happened.
No, so I'm trying to do too much. I'm trying to pick off more than I can chew at the moment.
I understand that.
But where can people find you on the interwebs?
Oh, my God. So many places. Not on OnlyFans yet, which is awesome. Only a matter of time, though. Glowjournal.com, glowjournalcreative.com. Haven't updated that website in a long time because I'm at capacity. So, and the Glow Journal podcast or on Instagram at JemKWatts or at glow.journal.
We'll make sure we link all that. On the point of OnlyFans, it would be very funny if someone created like a parody OnlyFans account at one point. I remember there was a famous YouTuber that created a Pornhub account.
Yeah.
And all of the titles were Watch Me Touch My Pussy. And it's her with like a cat. Patting her cat. And it was the funniest fucking thing ever. Like it was brilliant trolling. I have to give it to her. It was really, really good. I can't remember her name, but it's a Bella something. Anyway.
That's not going to rule it down.
Yeah. I'm sure Lauren will find the link. Gemma, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening in to this episode. If you like it, do leave us a written review on your podcast app as it helps us continue going on a weekly basis and we do love reading those reviews as well. If you want the show notes, you can find that below or with our previous guest at neural.com/podcast. That's NEURALLE.com/podcast. To watch the full video, search Uncommon Show on YouTube, and to keep up to date with behind the scenes and clips for the show, you can find us at uncommon_show on Instagram. But until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.